In episode 130 of the Guitar Music Theory podcast, I welcome Guitar Theory for Dummies technical editor Sandy Williams to talk about added chord tones and extensions. Greetings, guitar engineers. Welcome to the Guitar Music Theory podcast. I am your host, Desi Cerna. And today, I sit down with Alexander Sandy Williams to discuss the naming of chords. Sandy served as technical editor for my books, Guitar Theory for Dummies and Guitar Rhythm and Technique for Dummies. He's on the music faculties of Butler University, DePaul University, and IUPUI. Sandy and I are going to explain how to correctly name chords such as G-sus2, G-13, and others. Maybe today's discussion is just the sort of thing you need to be working on right now, or maybe your guitar playing needs help in other areas. If you need help determining what you should specifically be working on right now in order to get your guitar skills together, go to my website, guitarmusictheory.com. Answer the question I ask you about your playing, and I'll send you free custom video instruction calibrated to your current level. Whether you need help with getting started with the basics, playing bar chords, finger picking, playing guitar solos, or you want to delve deeply into music theory, I have a free course for you. Get on one of my plans now by going to guitarmusictheory.com. You can click on the link in the podcast show notes. All right. Well, Sandy, welcome to the Guitar Music Theory podcast.
Great to see you, Desi.
Yeah. Looks like you're sitting in your office there. I see you got a whiteboard behind you, and there's like some Egyptian hieroglyphs written on there. So you're theorizing and working on music and stuff. Why don't you maybe introduce yourself to my audience and just give them a little bit of a basic background of what you do and how you and I know each other?
Well, I've been based out of Indianapolis for 40 years, playing in bands, doing a lot of studio recording. At one time, there was a big jingle music scene here. It was super fun. You'd go in for an hour, record, go to another studio, record. And there was also a big gospel music recording scene here because Bill Gaither, who wrote He Touched Me, which Elvis recorded, Bill Gaither's studio is just like an hour north of here. And so we did a lot of jingles, gospel music, and we still do some publishing work here in Indianapolis. And occasionally, you know, the custom session where somebody will want a hired gun to come and add to a song. But most of my time now is spent teaching at three colleges. Butler University, IUPUI in downtown Indianapolis, and DePaul University in Greencastle. And it's fun. I get to run a combo, a jazz combo, and there's always a curveball with that. Like one of the combos this year has a violin, vocal. So it's not just like having a saxophone and a trumpet and playing Miles Davis songs. It's a challenge, but I'm still having fun playing music. And I guess I should mention I've been involved with doing some book work with that's how I met you. I was hired by Wiley Publications to just proofread your book, and I remember meeting you at a studio session a film session where they were filming you, which was kind of fun. And it's really nice to see the face behind this, you know, person that I've spent so much time studying.
And you were checking out my guitar, and I took a picture of you holding my, it was a like a red Fireburst PRS P22 guitar, and that's still the contact image I have saved in my phone.
Oh, nice.
Your number.
You didn't give me that guitar, though. I wanted it, but you wouldn't give it up.
Well, hey, reach out to PRS. They've got it now. I actually sent that one back.
Oh, that's too cool. And I should say also, I worked on four books with the guitar player from Steely Dan, John Harrington. Once again, proofreading and editing them.
Yeah, so you're actually credited as the technical editor for the two books that I authored for the Wiley Publishing Company, and that is Guitar Theory for Dummies and Guitar Rhythm and Technique for Dummies. So basically, you kind of proofread it to make sure that there were no technical errors.
Yeah.
And I don't think you found that many. I don't know. I don't remember you marking up the text that much. But I do remember you having some input here and there, and definitely adding some more clarity, or maybe just finding some mistakes. As we're going to find out with some of this theory stuff, there are some strict conventions, and there are some cases where there's more than one correct answer, and it's kind of it's a matter of perspective.
It's kind of in flux, and sometimes dependent on cultural, geographic location. Believe it or not.
Yeah. Sure. Yeah. So when you teach at the universities, is it mainly jazz guitar stuff?
About half of it. I mean, some of it's just kind of general guitar, music therapy students that are just trying to bring their guitar playing up to a certain skill level, to go play songs in hospitals and have to know how to take a simple chord progression and transpose it to two or three different keys and basic musicianship type skills.
Good. Well, you know, in addition to us working together, since I always hung on to your contact information, I do text you out of the blue. It could be 6 months, you know, in between texts, but I'm always like, hey, Sandy, I got a question for you. Just because I'm trying to clarify something, or I want to have an idea. I usually will ask my guitar buddies, but then I always remember you, and you're always very responsive, and I appreciate that.
My pleasure.
And, you know, you sent me a video a long time ago where you were playing Stairway to Heaven, that transition into the solo, where you correctly had worked out the timing of it. Had I asked you about that, or how did that come about? Because I realized when I saw that video that I was turned around on the timing, and I was playing it incorrectly.
You had asked me about that. I love songs that do that. I mean, there's... Spirits in the Material World by the Police, and All Along the Watchtower, the Hendrix. There's some kind of, I played it wrong in all through high school. I mean, every time I played that song, I think I didn't play one in the right place. But that's part of the fun of rock. But Stairway to Heaven in particular is really.
Do you remember that part?
Yeah. Oh, I don't think I can. I don't think I can play it now.
We're talking about, I think I remember, it's when we go to the, and if I tap my foot, it should be.
Right. Sounds like pickup notes.
And yeah, so I might have to do a lesson on that someday. I recently did a lesson on the beginning of Take It Easy by the Eagles.
Oh, yeah, that's a good one.
But you know, they're coming in on the and of four.
Right, there. Yeah.
Because most people hear that as the downbeat. They hear it as.
Right.
But it's actually one, two, three, four.
Yeah, love it.
Anyway, so.
My wife Pam just played with the Eagles recently, and.
Did she really?
She kind of listens to the Eagles nonstop now.
So what does she play?
Violin.
And how did she get connected with
she
that?
She just got it was one concert. It was one of the local contractors called her. But she played with Page and Plant and Frank Sinatra, and she's done all kinds of.
Oh, well, that's really cool. I didn't know that. So a musical marriage.
It is.
Do you guys play music together, or is it like That's the one person you cannot
We
work with.
sometimes play together. So another good turnaround song is Rock and Roll by Led Zeppelin, the drum
Oh, that
intro,
intro. Yeah,
which
good.
a drummer straightened me out on that. If you listen to it as he's playing Johnny B. Goode.
Yeah.
But when you hear it, it just sounds like he's coming in on one, but he's really playing pickup notes.
Yeah, I actually saw a video on that. I think where a drummer broke that down and taught you how to count it and feel it. It's critical. You got to understand that the first note you're hearing is not the downbeat of one.
Which, after hearing it for 4,000 times, it's really hard to do that.
Bonham was counting it. John Bonham, the drummer, was counting himself off in his head, and so he's thinking like one, or it's like one, three. I think he's coming in on three or something like
It's
that.
and a three, just like Johnny B. Goode. Da, 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 da.
Gotcha. Oh, that's cool. I'll have to go back and revisit that and think of it that way.
Have you messed with the software Moises? Like, it's like noises, but with the letter M. And there's a phone app and a computer app, and it,
Moises.
yeah, it splits. You can upload a stereo track into it, and it'll split the instruments out. It's not perfect, but it's for depending on how something's mixed, it's amazing. And the thing about that app is it will put a click in. It'll analyze the song and put a click in.
Yeah, so it figures out where the downbeat is for most of the music, and then it goes back to the beginning and puts that count in at the time. Oh, that's cool.
Yeah, it's
That could be
fun.
cool.
When I first got that, I was up like every night going, "I wonder what, Abbey Road sounds like that," and taking the bass out, and super
Well, I
fun.
am actually testing out a software called RipX. I don't know if you're familiar with that, but software where you drop an MP3 in there, and it's supposed to separate the instrumentation. What it's doing is it's just kind of separating frequency ranges, and doesn't qu work quite as well as they kind of claim it to work, or I hope it would work, but it's still kind of useful. And I might
Sure.
be doing a video or something on that where I demonstrate that in the future. Well, let's talk about today's topic. So we're going to talk about adding chord tones and extensions to chords. This is something that comes up a lot in my podcast, particularly as I'm analyzing songs and trying to name the chords. In my previous podcast, my friend Matt Revere and I, we talked through the song "Power of Love" by Huey Lewis and the News, and we got to that bridge section there, and there's some very interesting chord changes. And some of them are a little tricky. We really weren't quite sure, how to correctly name them. And that just comes up a lot. And so what I want to talk about today is maybe the basic convention with naming some of these chords. And I want to talk about how as you start adding chord tones and extensions, sometimes there's not one perfect agreeable name because you could look at it from some different perspectives and come up with a different name. And we'll talk about how we guitar players actually often have to leave chord tones out because we physically can't fit them all into a chord shape, or sometimes a chord just becomes too dense with too many of its chord tones in there. So you have to take some out just so you have a little bit more clarity in the chord there. And so you end up having chords that are named one way, but you're technically not playing all of those chord tones. And that can be confusing to people. So we'll talk a little bit about that. I've tried to tune this guitar up a few times and it keeps sounding a little out of tune when I play. Are you noticing that too? So I'm gonna let's pick up another guitar. But I've got Guitar Theory for Dummies opened up here to, what is it, Chapter 5? Chapter 5. And we're going to take a look at this. Let me tune up this. I switched from my Gibson Epiphone Dot, which normally I don't have any tuning issues with. I don't know if those strings are old or not. I just picked up my Bluesman Vintage Guitars Sedan. It's a Stratus Stratocaster style guitar. I'm plugged into my Kemper profiling amplifier, like I always use. And Sandy, what are you playing?
I'm playing a Martin D28 that I bought in 1983. That's just pretty standard. And it's not super in tune, but
close enough for rock and roll. Okay. Sorry about that, podcast listeners, but I'm in tune now, I think.
So I'm gonna check quickly here. Of course, now the display doesn't work. Perfect.
Well, let's see. Let's talk about adding chord tones to chords. I'm going to read a little bit here. Again, this is from my book, Guitar Theory for Dummies, available at retailers around the world. And Sandy Williams was the technical editor. So I say chords are constructed from roots, thirds, and fifths. These intervals come from the major scale, where the scale degrees produce different triads, some major and some minor, and one diminished. Guitar players add chord tones and extensions to triads by incorporating other degrees from the major scale. These added scale degrees include seconds, fourths, sixths, seventh, ninths, elevenths, and thirteenths. That's a lot of ths. So I go on to say that in other areas of the book, I teach you how to build your basic major and minor triads. That gives you your basic major and minor chords. And in this chapter, I'm going to show you how you would start adding other chord tones to those chords. And I also say, rather than have you play all the chord types that are taught in traditional theory, I use this chapter to focus you on chords that guitarists typically use in popular music. So if you're going to kind of go down the rabbit hole and study chord construction as a guitar player, you're going to likely get into a lot of chord types that you just would not likely encounter on guitar. So, and that's kind of my approach in all of Guitar Theory for Dummies, is I'm trying to focus on what's the actual theory that most guitar players, and let's be honest, most guitar players listening to rock music, what's the actual theory that's going to be most helpful to them? So I take that approach in this chapter as well, and I try to stick with chord types where I can actually reference some type of familiar song. There's a lot of jazz chords or chords that might come up in other styles of music that I just leave out because it's like would be too confusing and wouldn't really be practical to most guitar players. But if you study what I've taught here and you want to, you know, explore that stuff, if someone moved on to jazz or something after this, they would certainly be able to.
Yeah, it's a great foundation.
Yes, great foundation. So we start here in G. I use the G major scale. And, you know, you can take the first degree, third degree, and fifth degree. That's your root third and fifth. Put those together, you get a major triad. You play those in different positions on the guitar. And if we want to add to that triad, we could add a seventh. So 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. 1, 3, 5, 7. So if I take a G chord, I've got an F sharp in there. So if I can take a G major chord and somehow fit an F sharp in there, or I'm going to get a major 7 sound. And we'll keep going. I could, so I've got 1, 3, 5, 7, and notice that this is kind of every other note. We're kind of leapfrogging our way through the scale here. 1, 3, 5, 7, next. You could put a 9 in there, and that would give you a G major 9. And its formula would be 1, 3, 5, 7, 9. And do you ever use a full major 9 for anything, Sandy? Where you would actually have the triad plus the 7?
No, but I might have the four top notes all together. For instance, playing...
there you go. Yeah, yeah.
Like if there's a bass player, I might just play the B minor 7 the top four notes of the G major 9.
Gotcha.
Or, I mean, there's other ways to play B minor. Just a B minor with a 7.
But you said B minor 7. You're thinking of it like, kind of like a polychord, maybe? Well, not technically.
No, just the, since I know the grip, the physical grip of a B minor 7, it's easier to come up with the muscle memory just to play that over G.
Yeah, that makes sense. Listeners, what he's saying is that he knows that the same notes that are in G major 9 are essentially a B minor 7 with a G in the bass.
That's right.
So you could play a B minor 7 chord and then put a G in the bass there. So I might do something like... Well, you could also think of... would that work? Yeah, couldn't you also just think of this as a D slash G?
Yeah, sure. And you know, you might see a chord symbol on a chart that has the chord like that for some functional reason related to the song, but often because the writer didn't know to write G major 9. I'm just saying it can appear both ways.
It might depend on maybe the primary instrument of someone who's transcribing it. Piano players will sometimes think differently. I mentioned polychords earlier. I think piano players often think in terms of polychords. If they notice that they've got two different types of triads that they're combining, they often maybe prefer to think of it that way.
Yeah.
We guitar players don't think of it that way because it's really harder for us to stack things that way. So that's not usually the perspective we have.
I think Steely Dan songs are a good source of chords like that.
Yeah, and typically when that's happening, though, we guitar players will probably just be playing a portion.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, on the piano, with the way things, way you can play things, you can often get more of those notes in there. Hey, I want to take a quick break here to tell you about today's sponsor, American Musical Supply. You can find them online at americanmusical.com. American Musical Supply stocks the latest and greatest gear from today's top brands. Everything for a beginner to a seasoned professional. Everything for the podcaster, home recording enthusiast, guitarist, drummer, vocalist, DJ, and more. And if you're looking to make a big purchase, American Musical Supply has the best payment plans. They approve more people and do not require you to open a new credit card. You can use one of your existing ones. Payment plans vary between 4 and 18 months. You are pre-approved on a 4 and 6-month payment plan with no credit check. You won't need to wait long to receive your order either. American Musical Supply has 4 warehouses across the United States that provide fast and free shipping. They keep the best top gear in each warehouse and can get to most of the U.S. in just 1 or 2 days. With over 30 years of award-winning customer service, you are sure to have a good experience shopping at American Musical Supply. Go to americanmusical.com and use the Guitar Music Theory promo code DESI to receive $20 off your next purchase of $100 or more. That's americanmusical.com. Use the promo code DESI, D-E-S-I, to receive $20 off your purchase of $100 or more. Head to americanmusical.com now to take advantage of this offer. You can click on the link in the podcast show notes. But anyway, so here in the book, I'm just showing you how we keep building. We've got, you know, 1-3-5, then 1-3-5-7, then 1-3-5-7-9. So we've got, you know, G major, G major 7, G major 9. And if we keep going, 1-3-5-7-9-11. We're still in the scale here, but we keep counting. And maybe I should just back up here and say that intervals, or these chord tones that we're adding here, so they're coming from the scale. And, you know, the scale's got 7 notes before you repeat in the next octave. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, and so on. And when it comes to naming the notes that you would combine in a chord, when you get beyond the first octave, you would kind of change the numbers. So starting on G here, and I've got G, A, B, C, D, E, F sharp. And then I get into the next octave. So here's G again. I should have said this. So the root is always considered the root, and it's always considered one. Yeah. But as you play past it, the next octave, when I go to that A, that's the second note in the scale. But because it's in the next octave, we would keep counting. It's eight. It's nine. Because from the beginning, one, two, three, four, five, six, seven, eight, nine. It's nine notes away from the original G. And then you've got 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, but we don't say 14.
So a tenth.
Blackbird is considered tenths.
Tenths.
Which are major thirds.
Right, but just spread out.
G, but it's spread out. Instead of G and this B, it's G and that B.
Yeah.
So it's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. So they're called tenth intervals. But the convention in music theory, and this is a strict one, is that when you're building chords, 1, 3, 5, and 7 are always referred to by those numbers when it's the basis of a chord. So we don't use the term 14 ever for a 7. The 7th is always a 7th. If I'm in the key of G, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 7 is F sharp. And as I build chords and use that, no matter where the F sharp is, it's always considered a 7th.
Yeah.
But then beyond that is where you start getting into your 9, 10, 11, you know, some of those. We're gonna talk about which ones are actually used. So we talked about major, major 7, major 9, major 11. And as you go through and build these chords, it is assumed that you have the chord tones from the all the way up to the name of the chord. So G major 1 3 5, G major 7 1 3 5 7, G major 9 is assuming you have everything through the 7, and then you add the 9. So G major 9 would be 1 3 5 7 9. G major 11 assumes you have everything up to the 9 plus the 11. So that's 1 3 5 7 9 11. And how would we do that here?
I would play it like, and I'd have to probably ditch the 5 and the 3, which it sounds like C, A, F sharp.
I'm actually holding some notes with my fretting hand. It's basically, when you put an 11 in there, that's a fourth.
Right. It sounds like a suspension. It sounds like, to me, like something you'd hear in like a little Beethoven piano piece or something. It's a
yeah. And this is a chord where this is not something. So we've got what? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. We've got 6 notes in here. Technically, we have 6 strings, so we might somehow be able to physically. I don't know if we could pull this off or not, honestly. And this is with guitar, this is where things get tricky. As you start adding more chords, it just sometimes becomes physically impossible to arrange them and play them on the guitar. You just can't reach them. The piano is a different story. Well, let's keep going. We did major 7, 9, 11. Next, you'd have G major 13. And that assumes that you have everything up to the 11. Now you're adding the 13th. So that means you'd have we'd have 1, 3, 5, 7, 9, 11, and 13. Now, so let's see. That 13 is actually the same as a 6th. So we're adding an E in there. And I don't even really know how to begin to play this.
Yeah, and yeah, once again, in practical applications, the 11th is usually omitted, just because it makes it sound like it's like a suspension.
Yeah, And too much tension too. There's often too much dissonance. There's
Yeah.
something's got to go. But I can't, I mean, can you think of any songs that you play that might be familiar songs where it's got a major 13?
No.
I can't. I mean, maybe somewhere. And oftentimes what might happen is that you might have a chord in a particular song and it's not a full major 13, but maybe it's got like a root 7, 9, and 13 or something like that.
Or root 7, 3, 13.
And so a transcriber will say, well, I guess this is most closely related to a G major 13, so I'll give it that name, but it doesn't contain all of its all of those chord tones. And somebody else, another transcriber, might say, well, technically that's down a G major 13. It doesn't have all the notes in there. And they might say it's more like a G major 7 add 13. Normally the 13 would have to have the 3, 5, 7, 9, 11, 13. So if it doesn't have all of those things in there, if it's just got like maybe the root, the seventh, and the six and the 13, they might just call it G major 7 add 13, like add a 13 to it. Because if you say G major 13, that's supposed to imply that you've got 7, 9, 11, and 13 all in there. So this is an example of where, what do you do? You know, it's like this is where it's kind of up to the discretion of the transcriber to determine what they want to call it. Just say, go ahead.
One of the reasons I like guitar books that have tab notation and chord symbols is chances are one of them has the actual, the closest thing that's needed. I mean, if you just have the staff notation, it might not show you how to the arrangement of how to play things. And if you play a chord with a particular voicing with open strings. With tab, it's really clear how to do that on guitar. If you just looked at the staff notation, you'd go, my fingers don't do that.
Yeah, it's one of the reasons why, you know, tablature is kind of necessary for stringed instruments like the guitar. Some people think, I still get some people that will email me and say, well, I never read tab. I know that's cheating and that's not good, you know. And I'm like, actually, it's kind of required. And tablature was actually the standard form of notation for many stringed instruments for throughout history. I don't think it was until recently, maybe even, was it Mel Bay? Who, you know, the granddaddy of all guitar methods, Mel Bay's modern guitar method. Wasn't he the first one to begin arranging guitar music for standard musical notation?
I think some of the classical standard Carcassi and some of those guys had done that, but yeah, I mean, definitely back in the early days, the lute. I have a lute, by the way. I have my mom's lute. It's
That's cool.
like featherweight and it's got a round back like an ovation. It's really hard to, yeah.
They hadn't quite yet figured out how to improve the ergonomics of that.
Yeah, I can't put my Floyd Rose on it.
Oh, no good. But so we were, so anyway, yeah, tablature is not a bad thing at all. And it's very helpful because sometimes we just kind of,
We need the clarification.
yeah, we need to see it. So let's see, let's move on here. Let's talk about add 9, add 11, add 13. So in the previous example here, we kept adding additional chord tones following that leapfrogging every other note formula, 1 3 5, 1 3 5 7, 1 3 5 7 9, 1 3 5 7 11, 1 3 5 7 9 11 13. Well, another thing you could do is instead of including all those notes, is you could just add the additional chord tone, but then take the others before it out. So you could have 1 3 5, 1 3 5 7, 1 3 5, skip the 7 9, 1 3 5, skip the 7, skip the 9, 11, 1 3 5, skip the 7 9 11 13, in which case you'll see music transcribers use the term add. So if you've got 1 3 5 7 9, that's a complete major nine chord. So they'll say major nine or MA nine or MAJ nine or something like that. But if you just have 1 3 5 9, no seven, then they might write it G add nine, because it's mm-hmm. a G major triad and you're adding the ninth. You don't have the major seventh in there, so it's not G major nine. And so that's actually done quite a bit. Take a G chord and put an A in there or something like that, or maybe up top.
But I prefer the way that you have it written here in the book, down at the bottom of the page.
Which one?
Page 72, G add 2.
Oh, G add 2. Gotcha. Yeah.
We'll yeah. Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yep. And so likewise, sometimes you'll see something like, you know, G add 11 or G add 13. If the 11 or the 13 is present, but you don't have the previous chord tones that would normally make the complete chord, technically you're supposed to write add 11 or add 13, but it's something that people aren't always consistent with because of reasons that we've kind of already talked
about. Yeah, a lot of those color tones are to indicate some kind of little melody. I mean, how do you... You could write a chord symbol for each one of those.
Yeah.
But it's really just a little melody that you're trying to capture.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah, like transcribers, as they're looking at a guitar part, they have to figure, like, what's the basic chord here that I could put over this measure? And how much of the other notes that are at play here do I want to take into consideration? If you're doing something like, you know, and they might write G5, and then, you know, G6, right? Because I'm going back and forth between a root and a fifth. Six. Or not. Sometimes they'll just put G up above the whole measure because they figure, well, this tonality works over G major, so let's just call this G.
Yeah. I always like the Joe Pass version. And this isn't necessarily about notation, but it's just in your mind. Joe Pass said that he thought of three types of chords: major, minor, and dominant seventh. And pretty much everything he played was filtered through that simplicity. And these colors that we're discussing are more refined versions of what might happen. But it's always good to keep, you know, the basic function in mind.
Oh, that's a good point. So sometimes transcriber might be thinking about the basic function in the chord progression or something, and that might influence something as well.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, let's keep going. We're still building G chords here. This is Guitar Theory for Dummies, Chapter 5. This is page 72 in my version of the book, although you might have the second edition of it, and so that layout is a little bit different. And in the next section, I'm talking about playing sus2, sus4, that sort of thing. And that sus is short for suspended, and it refers to suspending or leaving out the third interval. So if you take a G, 1 3 5 is G, B, D. If you raise that third interval, B, up a half step to, well, actually, let's do this the other way first. If you lower that third interval, B, down to the note before it in the scale, that would be A. So now instead of 1 3 5, you have 1 2 5, and we call that G sus 2. That means G suspend the third, add a 2. Sometimes you'll see people write that G add 2, but that actually implies that you have the full G major triad, G B D, and you're adding a 2. If you say G sus 2, that means that the third has been suspended, so it's actually just 1 2 5. You could also take that third and you could move it up a half step to the next note of the scale, in this case, B to C. And now we've changed the formula from 1 3 5 to 1 4 5. And we call that G sus 4, and that means G suspend the third, leave it out, 4. If you play a G major triad, a full G major triad, G, B, D, and add a C note to it, then you could call that G add for.
Yeah.
Right. So that's the difference between sus and add. Sus implies that you are removing the third interval. It's been suspended and is replaced with either the two or the four. Add means that you are keeping the full major triad intact, and then you're adding a two or a four. And I think that's what you were saying earlier. What were you saying? So in this, let's see, like the third.
Well, I think one thing that's worth pointing out is that if you're playing a song and it's going G to C and the bass player is going, and the second chord could be, could be an add to, but the bass player could play, and you could play, you don't necessarily have to add the B because the bass player or keyboard player is going to do it. So you could just play the sus2, right? And so just because the chord symbol says that, you can edit the guitar part. Sometimes it's better to, you know, to not have everybody playing all the notes in the chord. It's a discretionary.
Yeah. Like, well, it's really common on guitar because guitar players will often play kind of chord fragments and stuff.
Right.
We're not always going to play, you know, complete bar chords or something.
Yeah.
We might just be playing some portions of it. Yeah. In which case, that could be something else that influences how a chord is named. It's like, are we gonna name this chord going by only the notes that the guitar player was playing, or are we gonna take the general sound of this chord,
right,
measure and what else is happening in the music, so, you know, for and take that into consideration for naming the chord. And that's why you could pull up a song, the sheet music from two different websites, and you can see that the same chord, it has a slightly different name.
No doubt.
Yeah. And we just kind of, we figure that out, and you get to understand this over time. So I end this page by talking about G add two and G add four. We actually already talked about that. But what did you say earlier? You said when we were doing the G add 11.
You were talking about adding the two.
Oh, G add 9 or G add 11, G add 2, G add 4.
Yeah.
Those could be the same thing.
Right.
Because let's take our G. So G, B, D, that's 1, 3, 5. If we're going to add in a 2, that's going to be an A. So A is 2. Or A is also 9,
right,
in the next octave.
Yeah.
And then C is 4.
Yeah.
C is that sus 4 or that add 4, depending on what else is left. But C is also 11 in the next octave. And this is where I get confused, Sandy. I would assume that if I'm playing a G chord, if I added an A in this register, I should call it 2. If I added an A in this register, I should call it 9. So,
I think
9, but
I think the general rule, the rules are to be taken with a complete grain of salt, but the general rule is that if there's a 9, it sort of implies that there's a 7. That's, I mean, like I said, it's all street rules. It's not like.
Well, that would be like if it says G major 9 for sure.
Right.
Or I guess G minor 9 as well.
Right.
That the seventh would be in there as well. 3, 5, 7, 9. You got to have everything up to.
But people write it, I've seen it as add 9 as well. And then there's a 6-9 chord, which doesn't even have a seventh.
Yep.
Yeah, so.
Special chord, got its own name. So I had kind of assumed that the placement of the note, the particular octave it's in, would indicate whether you would call it a 2 or a 9 or a 4 or a an 11 or a 6 or a 13. But I realized that that doesn't seem to be a convention that people follow, and I might have just gotten on the wrong track by assuming that.
Well, you can put notes in different octaves. If I play, sorry, I'm crazy out of tune, but I'm playing, to me, that's G major 9, and the A is the 9, but it's like in the middle of the chord. Or like you were playing the D.
Yeah. Right, so that's got, well, it's got the major 7 in there, and then the 9, major 9.
Yeah, that works as a G major 9, or you might see it written as D slash G.
This is where it's super important to understand that when you're working with numbers here, that once you get to like 6, the scale, 6 or an octave higher is 13, and then 2, I should have started with 2, excuse me, 2 and 9 are the same. So once you get used to this, musicians know that 2 and 9 are the same. If you're in G, 2 is A, 9 is A. So we would use those interchangeably, and we know that they're actually the same. And then we know that 4 and 11 are the same. In this case, that would be C, or C and octave higher. So, and then we know that 6 and 13 are the same. And as you learn this stuff and start using chords that use these intervals, you know, you get to know that. And what that means is that whether someone said, if you're dealing with adding an A note to a G chord, it doesn't really matter if you say 2 or 9. Most musicians, they're going to get it. It's kind of like different term for essentially the same note. And on guitar particularly, we don't always have as much choice in where we would add these extra chord tones. We got to fit them in where we can. So if we're going to add an A to a G chord, if we're going to play G, add 2, well, I can't even really actually put it in this particular octave. I've got to leave the third out. I got to switch the B from A. So that makes it a G sus 2 technically. Or I could go. How about this? There we go.
Nice chord.
Yeah, G, B, D, and then there's the A. And so I would call that G at 9, probably, because I'm in the next octave. Whoops. Excuse me. But if I decided I wanted to put A all the way up top here, you know, I would still call that G at 9. That's A. That's A. Whatever, it's 2, it's 9, whatever. That's the convention. They're the same, whatever.
Always like it when you go to a session and somebody just writes a question mark over the chord. G question mark. Oh, thanks a lot.
Yeah. That means there's some sort of cool G going on here. I don't know what to call it.
Yeah.
So
figure it out.
Yeah. So let's see if there's anything else I want to say. Got G at 2, G at 4, G at 9, G at 11, essentially the same thing. Let me pull up.
I have a chord symbol story if you.
Oh, that would be a perfect time. And
so,
now,
so
Sandy's going to tell us a story.
Yeah, come sit on my lap. After Jaco Pastorius, the great bass player that played in Weather Report and played with Joni Mitchell, after he passed away, several magazines put out big tributes to him, and I used to buy them all because I loved his playing. And Bass Player magazine had a big article about him, and they included a chart that he wrote out for bass player Mark Egan, who played with Pat Metheny, a chart in Jaco's handwriting of some bass exercise. And Jaco wrote sevens with a little line through them, which is, when I lived in France when I was a kid, that's how we drew sevens. But I mean, we don't draw sevens like that. And the guy writing the article said, it's really weird that Jaco has a B natural over a C7 chord. But the symbol, that seven with a line through it was a symbol that people used to use for major seven. In Ted Green's book, in Chord Chemistry and Modern Chord Progressions, that's how he writes major sevens. It was kind of a convention back in the late 60s and early 70s, but you don't really see it now.
Well, you had shared a PDF with me, standardized chord symbol notation PDF. I don't even know if this thing's still in print. I don't know that I found it when I Googled it, but listeners, you can search for standard chord symbol notation. That's the name of the title, I think, wasn't it?
Right.
And what I thought was funny is how they were going to set the record straight.
Yeah.
With what was an acceptable and what was unacceptable,
yeah,
in terms of conventions and naming these chords. And I'm like, but that's not how anyone does. Like, nobody says that anymore,
yeah,
writes that anymore. When was that published?
70s, maybe.
Yeah.
I love, like, one of the first pages is like just like 30 versions of a C major seven.
Yeah.
And which is correct? Well, I mean, pick
it. And I think it had the little seven with the line through it as an,
yeah,
acceptable. Yeah, there were some conventions in there that I like had never even seen. I was like, really? So I guess rules are subject to change.
In Canada, they write seven with a circle around it. I think in the Brazil, they write a seven with a plus. With a plus, to me, means augmented.
Right. Yeah. But I think too.
We used to do sessions for Brazilian producers who would come up to Indiana because it was a hotbed of gospel recording, and the first few sessions were going like, whoa, something's wrong here. And then we figured out that the terminology,
they're not augmented chords. Wow.
No.
Yeah, that was hard to listen to there.
I mean, one O Darlin, or
right,
what's the Eddie Money song?
Maybe Hold On to Me.
Yeah.
D to D augmented.
Yeah. You know what's funny is we have major triad. You talked about triads, major triads, minor triads, augmented triads, but it's super rare on guitar to ever see an actual diminished triad. Do you know of any?
You mean, so an actual diminished triad, you mean where you actually play it without transposing any of the
where, well, I mean, we know.
You really go, play it in order.
Right, and to not have the fourth note. Because
Right, yeah. We often don't stack things the way that they would typically be stacked when you see it presented in standard notation or played on the piano. So that's something you learn as a guitar player. You just learn that guitars, you know, were a little unique with the way we approach things. You know, when we play, we're going to get to this, so hang on. So I pulled up some notes, and let's see. Is this for some dominant chords? It says the 11th is merely one more third placed above the 9th. I keep using the term leapfrogging every other note in the scale. That's a third interval. It's like if you start on G, 1, 2, 3, G to B is a third interval. Or if you start on A, you know, 1, 2, 3. Or, well, I mean, sorry, G is a third interval. If you start on B, 1, 2, 3. G to E to D. Sorry, people, I can't talk today. B to B is a third interval, so we're going up in third intervals. Third interval. Now, let's see. Do we need to talk about dominant 11th chords? I don't know if we need to go through all of this. But you can take a dominant chord. That's going to be 1, 3, 5, flat 7. Then you can have 1, 3, 5, flat 1, 3, 5, flat 7, 9.
I think you're playing Pretty Woman. Yeah.
the ski, but yeah, you're right. Let's see, if we go to 9 and the next would be what? 11? Something like that. That would be a G 11. We're not saying major 11 anymore. We would just say 11. The convention is like, if you're going to play a major 7 chord, you'd say, you know, G major 7. If you're going to play a dominant 7th chord with a flat 7, you just say G 7. And then as you add additional extensions on top of that. Did I clarify that extension would refer to the notes beyond the first octave?
Right? Yeah, that's a good point.
So if you're playing anywhere from 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, those are just considered chord tones. And then as you get beyond the octave, you're adding chord tones that are called extensions. They extend beyond the octave. So if you play a G dominant 7th, and you extend it to 9. Ah.
And typically, you don't see G7 parentheses 9, but you might. But usually, just see G9, and that's assume that it's a dominant 7th chord.
Right. Yep.
Yeah.
There you go. So that's 1 3 5 7 9. Then you can go 1 3 5 7 9 11, and it would just say G11. And that implies that the 9 and the 7 are in there. So, you know, that's, I could do it like this maybe.
Yeah, nine times out of 10, that's how you would hear it without the third.
Yeah. And this is where you start adding so many notes that we physically cannot fit them all in on the fretboard. Or sometimes it just becomes too dense and you get some dissonance between them. So
yeah, the B, if you play that interval's kind of harsh.
Yeah.
So it's usually not played.
And sometimes we will simplify it and think of it a little bit differently because we notice, well, wait a minute, we've got a G root, but then we also had F, A, and C. Well, wait a minute, F. That was the flat 7, 9, and 11. Well, F, A, and C actually just make an F major chord.
Right.
So you could say F major / G.
Right. See it written like that all the time. What's the... I can't play it on this guitar. Steely Dan Pretzel Logic.
Oh, cool. I don't know that one.
It's got just... triads, but with different bass lines.
Well, I think about using this chord as basically like a form of a G or G dominant 7th that would lead to C. So I might do something like G, F / G to C. But yeah. You might see someone call this G11.
Yeah.
To C. And you know, you got options. How do you want to think of it? You want to think of it as G11, or do you want to just think of it as, well, it's like part of an F chord with a G in the bass. How do you want to name it? Your choice. You know, probably maybe depends on how it's kind of used functionally too. Like if I'm doing something like in that case, well, I'm really creating some dominant push here with a G7 chord. With the, you know, obviously my intention was some dominant function push to C. So if I started adding, you know, I'm thinking in my head G7 or G9 or G11. I would probably use that name.
How do you teach? I'm just curious how you teach a student this fingering. I usually end up having them play an F bar chord and then kind of make, then add the G bass.
You mean dealing with beginners?
Yeah.
I will usually avoid full bar chords as long as possible. So I usually get them started on G, C,
yeah.
G minor.
But I'm saying this G11, like how do you go there from?
Oh, you mean like, so a more advanced student and where this shape
right.
comes up?
Yeah, you want to end up with that.
How to build it, you mean?
Well, just physically, just to play it.
So, yeah, I mean, I'm thinking about, in my head, I'm thinking first about that short form of F.
Right.
Which a lot of people learn is the F chord initially. But then I got to get my ring finger over to the G.
Right.
Now I've just taken it off the F. I got to get my pinky there.
Right.
I use this chord quite a bit, so I'm kind of used to it, you know?
Yeah.
Who I use this in? Stuff like, maybe like, you know,
nice.
I'm doing that wrong. That's what I wanted. So I've switched keys here, but anyway, I'm so used to it. I'm sure I use this in other stuff too. It's actually not all that uncommon, because it is a type, if I go back to G here, it is a type of dominant seventh. You got the nine, you got the seven in there. And we do that sort of stuff all the time, you know, G7, C, or G9, or sus4. And you put it all together if you got this dominant seventh, nine, and four. There's a fish song in there too, isn't there? Like a you know the song Contact by Fish? You know, the tires are the thing on your car that make contact to the road. It's a silly song by a silly band.
Then I heard a funny story about Fish though. I guess Warren Haynes and Derek Trucks were doing the Allman Brothers. Maybe after Dickie was taking a break or something, and they were playing the whole concert got really esoteric, and some of the jams got really crazy. And when they got back on the bus, Greg Allman goes, "Okay, who's the Fish fan?"
Got a little too fishy for him.
Little fishy.
Felt fishy. Yeah, those Fish guys would really kind of get edgy and take it out there. Really try to get outside the box. They're actually quite good at it, where all of a sudden the music sounded very chaotic and dissonant, and you're like, and then they would slowly like bring it back, and the way they would just kind of morph in and out. Real talented players. Maybe not for everyone. You know, maybe your average music listener might be.
I'm not super into them, but I have really enjoyed when they do a whole album tribute to the, you know, let's see, what have they done? I think they've maybe a Led Zeppelin album or a Who album. They'll do the whole album on stage.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, they would do that. That was kind of like, yeah, that was kind of cool. Well, we talked about G11, and we could keep going. We could have what? 1, 3, 5, 7, 9, 11, 13. Now here's an important chord. So this is considered a type of G7 chord. It's a G dominant seventh chord, got an F natural in there, a flat seventh. And then we're adding intervals on there, G5, 1, 3, 5, 7, 1, 3, 5, 7, 9, 1, 3, 5, 7, 9, 11, 1, 3, 5, 7, 9, 11, 13. 13 is E, it's the same as the sixth. And guitar players, we actually use 13 chords quite a bit. And a good example of it would be Texas Flood by Stevie Ray Vaughan.
Nice.
Yeah, we call that G13. But here's the interesting thing. Is it a G13? What am I playing? I've got a root, flat 7, major 3rd, 13. That's it. So I don't have the fifth in there. I don't have the ninth in there. I don't have the 11th in there. But this will almost always be called G13.
Right.
You could also call it G7, add 6, or add 13. But it's almost always called G13. It's used in blues music a lot. You know? But that's totally incorrect. It's not a 13. If it was a 13, it should have 1, 3, 5, 7, 9, 11, 13. That's the convention. But it doesn't. It just has 1, 7, 3, 13. But whatever.
Yeah.
Oh, 13. That's all we have time for today. Podcast episode 130 is a wrap. And I want to thank my friend Sandy Williams for joining me today. Sandy served as the technical editor for two of my books that I published for the Wiley Publishing Company, Guitar Theory for Dummies and Guitar Rhythm and Technique for Dummies. You can find those books available at any online or in-store retailer. Don't forget about today's sponsor, American Musical Supply. Go to AmericanMusical.com and use the Guitar Music Theory promo code DESI to receive $20 off your next purchase over $100. And don't forget that if you have not yet enrolled in a free video course on my website, go to GuitarMusicTheory.com, answer the question I ask you about your playing, and I will send you free custom video instruction calibrated to your current level. All right, guitar engineers, thanks for listening. Before you go, be sure to subscribe to this podcast, give it a 5-star rating, and leave me a great review. Then keep playing and stay tuned for more.